We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBA Front Office Show. We've got a lot going on in the NBA today. We've got the conference finals kicking off. Well, at least the Eastern Conference finals start today. We have the NBA draft lottery. We've got some news, some DeAndre Ayton news. Suddenly, his future with the Suns looking very much in doubt. We'll discuss that, plus a few other things, even a transaction that went down today. I mean, something that was expected, but still something for us to get into. So we'll dive right into it. I'm Trevor Lane. You can find me at Trevor_Lane over on Twitter. Keith Smith at Keith Smith NBA. Keith, I guess we should start with the draft. The draft lottery is today. Yeah. And I'll be totally honest. I had no idea. I had no idea it was today. I didn't even realize it. I have paid zero attention to it. Like, okay, as of a couple of days ago, I didn't know it was today. Because there's nothing good that can come of the draft lottery today. The only possibility is more pain. And so I have paid zero attention to when the draft lottery is this year, which is in stark contrast to previous years where I've had lucky draft lottery socks that I've worn that day, all these different superstitions and things like that. This year, for some reason, I'm just not very interested in the draft lottery.
For some reason. I wonder what that reason could be. You know what's even more kind of just twisting the knife on Lakers fans, even on the NBA's official thing that comes out.
It's going to show the Lakers. Yeah.
Later in the lottery, it shows LA Clippers, but is denoted to OKC. The Lakers one just has a little note because there's still a very, very slight chance that it could go to Memphis instead of the Pelicans. But it still just says Lakers with a footnote, which is that is just brutal. So my guess is they've probably had cards made up that says Pelicans via Lakers or whatever it is. But yeah, because it's an extremely slight chance that it could convey the other way. We'll get into that more in just a minute. Mm-hmm. I want to tell a quick little story just because it made me think of it when you were talking about all this stuff. One of the guys, a big part of Celtics Twitter, he was like, it's weird, I refreshed Tankathon a million times today and I never got the Celtics with the top four pick. And then that made me think of remember those years of being in the East Finals and still having top lottery picks from from the Nets trade? Oh, the memories of that. But yeah, so tonight it'll all go down. What I thought we could do is just very quickly run through the order of the teams pre-lottery and then talk a little bit about their odds to jump up into the top four or stay in the top four. That's the important thing to remember now. It's the top four picks are decided by the lottery. It's not just the top one, two, or three picks anymore, and the odds have flattened out. So number one team pre-lottery, Houston Rockets. Orlando Magic, number two, Detroit Pistons, number three. They all have the same odds for top four. Uh-huh. So 14% at number one, 13.4 for the number two pick, 12.75 for the number three pick, and then almost 12% for the number four pick. Each of those teams has a 52.14% chance of getting a top four pick. So even that said, that's just over 50% chance they're going to stick in the top four. If anybody jumps up, they would obviously bounce back, unless it's them. Right behind those teams, the last pick that gets decided by the lottery, the Oklahoma City Thunder, that's where the odds drop off, 12.5% chance at the number one overall pick. The Indiana Pacers, fifth, 10.5% chance at the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing with the Pacers. I don't know if you saw this. Do you know the last time they picked inside the top 10?
The Pacers, it's been a long time.
1989.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been like forever since they picked in the top 10. Yep. They never had a top 10 pick.
Great. Shouts to the Pacers for consistently being a pretty good team. And that's not even one of those where it's like they didn't pick in the top 10 because they traded away a pick the one year they were like seventh or something. Right. They're never up that high. So we'll see, do the basketball gods, smile upon them for, kind of playing it out right, for years and years. And they weren't even really full on tanking down the stretch either, because they were still playing their guys most of the games. They were just bad. Mm-hmm. Then Portland Trailblazers, number 9, that's the 6th team coming in. Sacramento Kings, number 7. And then number 8, sorry, got to do it. The Los Angeles Lakers, that pick will go to the New Orleans Pelicans. Most likely, the only way it doesn't go to the Pelicans is if that pick gets actually pushed back, because several teams jump up. They would need 3 teams to jump up, and then that pick goes to the Memphis Grizzlies if it falls 11th
So let's go Charlotte, New York, and Washington. Those 3 Eastern Conference teams, please jump up. No, actually, it really doesn't. From the Lakers' perspective, it doesn't matter. Yeah. The pick's gone no matter what. It doesn't really matter that much. But
yeah, you're kind of crying over.
Exactly.
There. Then the San Antonio Spurs, 4.5% chance at the top overall pick. Washington Wizards, 3%. New York Knicks, 2%. LA Clippers, but that pick goes to the Oklahoma City Thunder. No protections at all on that one. 1.5%. Charlotte Hornets, 1%. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers, those pesky Cavs of the, oh so much lottery luck over the years, 0.5% chance of the top overall pick. So here's my viewing advice for this, for anyone who watches this evening. You want to, if you're Cleveland, Charlotte, OKC, you just don't want to see your envelope want to hear come your out name. When it's your time, because that means you've jumped into the top 4 somewhere. Generally, how this usually goes is they'll do the non-top 4 picks. We'll get those all in order. Then they'll do a lengthy commercial break. They'll come back and refresh us on all of this. The NBA, only the NBA can draw out a lottery drawing show be a whole half hour show. We should note that too. 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN prior to Celtics game 1 in Eastern.
But what'd you say? I didn't even know that either. I didn't know what it is.
Man, you are out. Trevor's like, this draft is foolish.
Yeah, I know. I was on a radio show the other day, and they were asking me about the top 3 picks and all that stuff, and I'm like, I have no idea. I haven't paid any attention to the draft. I'm like, I know I have to really start on my draft. I've been saying that every day, though, and I just don't. I keep not having the time to dive into it. It's going to happen, though.
My friend, it's not like you're watching games and having a podcast about them after. So, I mean, come on now. If I'm finding time to cram in a prospect or two here and there, I expect you to have the top, let's say 200-300 players scouted by the time.
200-300?
Yeah.
Oh, no problem.
We're going to NFL.
No problem. I can get there. I can get there.
Yeah, there'll only be 58 guys drafted, but sure.
No problem.
I want you to know guys who are playing third tier teams in Europe and deciding to take a banking job.
I can get there. It's not like. Just to give you an idea, so at the minimum, we do 5 of these shows a week. And then on top of that, I've got 4 Lakers Nation shows. So I've got 2 shows 4 days out of the week, plus all the videos I do in between. I don't do anything, though. Most of the time, I'm just kind of sitting around not doing much of anything. But I can tell you what's going to happen. The Celtics are winning the championship. And the Lakers pick, 26% chance of going into the top 4, is going number 1 because it has been the worst Lakers season ever. So that is what is going to happen. That's the way this is going to play out. You can look back on this video and I can say, I told you so, because that has been, we have jumped into the bad place and it has been torturous for Lakers fans this season.
Man, that would truly be like the worst like part of all of this. And imagine then on like the heels of that, LeBron's like, you know what? I've decided to retire. Like I'm done.
I might retire if it goes that route.
Right. if that all comes down like that, I'll dig it out. I have it. It's on my old laptop, but I'll go get it. I will tweet out the picture of Kobe in the Celtics gear at his Celtics workout too, just to really, really get kick you.
Best player to ever put on that jersey.
Oh man.
Sorry, that was one of my Lakers colleagues. Put that out on Twitter at one point. Somebody threw, and that was his response, and I thought that was pretty good.
That is funny. Yeah, it's one of those ones where too it is. It's one of those like, man, what, you know? Imagine what could have been. Yeah. You know, if you know, that's, we'll do it. That'll be it. Let's do that as an off-season show. Like, just what, like, if really get into, like, you know, yeah, just that whole like stuff with Kobe, like, you know, how he, you know, whether you believe it or not, engineered his way to the Lakers and all that stuff. I think it's pretty clear. It's pretty true now, because they definitely scared John Calipari out of, you know, getting him instead to the Nets.
Kerry Kittles. I do want to mention before we move off the draft lottery that, just for everybody who's watching it, Zach Lowe has done a bunch of pieces from inside the actual draft room and all of that. So there's a lot of kind of behind the scenes stuff that we've heard to further our understanding of how the process actually works. What you're seeing in terms of what's being revealed on TV is not actually the draft lottery taking place. The draft lottery takes place behind closed doors. It happens like a half hour before, but the people who are in that room aren't allowed to leave. They have to surrender their cell phones. And
they don't have their phones.
Yeah, they don't even have phones, either. Nothing. Yeah. They're locked in there, essentially. And so what you're seeing is really just revealing the results of that. The draft lottery has actually already taken place. Everybody in that room already knows who got the number one pick. They just can't share it with everybody until it's actually gone out on television. So again, all you're watching is the announcement of where the picks landed. You're not actually watching where the ping pong balls fell.
Yeah, and they don't let them out of the room until it's actually complete on TV, because they don't want them like coming out and like tipping off, you know, anybody who's on the stage. The NBA has tweeted out to who's going to be on stage, who's in the room, and all those things. And for anybody who still said, because, you know, no matter who gets the first pick, they're going to get a whole bunch of
frozen
rigged
envelope and,
you know,
all that.
The NBA wanted this. It would be virtually impossible for this to be rigged, because here's the thing that would have to happen is, in the wild, wild world where you could get every team on board that's in that room to agree, like, yeah, we're all in agreement, it should go to the Charlotte Hornets, you know, for whatever reason that would be, that, you know, just let's live in that fantasy land for a minute. Then you also, there's always at least one, somewhere between one and three media members in there who would love nothing more than to break the story that the, you know, draft lottery is rigged. You know, so maybe back in the day, maybe there was a, you know, frozen envelope or, you know, creased corners or something, when it was the most ridiculous way of deciding it, of just pull a random envelope out of a, you know, basket. But, you know, it's a, it's not like that anymore. It's, there's too, it'd be way too hard to get this many people on board with, you know, this kind of conspiracy.
The problem is, when you look back at NBA history, you can pinpoint those moments where you say, if they were going to rig it, it would have ended up just like this. I mean, like Derrick Rose to Chicago, LeBron going to Cleveland, Zion Williamson landing in New Orleans right after they lose Anthony Davis. Heck, the Lakers coming off of basketball reasons, and then they get what, they keep their pick 3 years in a row, keep getting the number two pick over and over and over. Like, there's stuff people could point to where they'll be like, that's kind of fishy, but when you look at the process,
even Greg Oden, Kevin Durant, Portland and Seattle, when it was like basketball in the Pacific Northwest is struggling. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but, you know, that's just, you know, people can have fun with that if they want to, but, you know, it's, I tend to very much believe, like, there's no way anybody could pull this off. Not in this day and age, you know, especially the media members. That'd be the biggest story you'd ever break in your life. So of course you know, ready to do that. But all right, let's talk about actual stuff.
Yes. Let's move on from the draft lottery that I want nothing to do with. So let's go. Before we get in, we're going to break down the conference final series, but let's get into this DeAndre Ayton situation, because this is, again, I talked about this on Lakers Nation. You and I talked about this on front office. Before game seven, we would have said with fair confidence that DeAndre Ayton would be back with the Suns, that they would simply, if he got an offer from another team, they would just match it, and that's it. Yep. Now it feels like that doesn't seem like the outcome that we're heading towards at all. In fact, it feels more like what we're going to see is probably a sign-and-trade. That feels kind of like where we're headed with this. we've seen some, you know, there was some stuff out today about, well, you know, the Pacers and the Suns talked before the trade deadline about a DeAndre Ayton deal. I think if the Suns just kind of say, okay, we're open to a sign and trade, I think there's going to be a lot of teams that'll be interested. Mm-hmm. But from the Ayton side, the understanding will be, hey, if we're going to do a sign and trade, I want that max offer. That's what he wanted last year. Didn't get it. Suns weren't willing to go there. If they sign and trade him, you've got to find a team that's willing to give him that max offer and then is willing to give stuff to the Suns in exchange in a sign and trade type deal. It'll be interesting to see if anybody just throws out a full max, like the Spurs or someone like that throws out a full max offer and what mm-hmm. the Suns do in that scenario. But I think going in, the Suns will have a good idea of what's going to happen. And so I think the most likely outcome here is now a sign and trade that sends him somewhere else.
In complete agreement, I think that's where it's going to go, because I don't think the Suns have any desire to just let him leave for nothing. So even if it's, let's just say, the Detroit Pistons, who project to have the most cap space, go all in on an offer sheet, I think Phoenix would match it, if for no other reason to retain control of the asset. So what I think is potentially likely here, different players, different situation, but remember when Malcolm Brogdon left the Bucks for the Pacers? Mm-hmm. He agreed to that deal with the Pacers, and then the Bucks said, hey, let's not mess around with an offer sheet. Let's make this a sign and trade and get this done, so we don't have to go through all jumping through all the offer sheet hoops of, you know, we're going to make you wait and all this stuff. We'll make it a sign and trade, mutually beneficial for both. That's kind of how I now expect this to play out for the Suns. Is it'll be, all right, you pick your spot, and as long as something works, like, it's not going to be do it and we get back, you know, four crappy contracts for him or something. They're not going to do that. But yeah, but if they can get into a position to, you know, do that and then get it into a spot where it is going to be mutually beneficial and the Suns can get back something there, I think they'll do it. Because I think, too, if you're the Suns, DeAndre Ayton is really, really good. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think the Suns are like, hey, we did all right with JaVale McGee when he played in his place. We did fine with Bismack Biyombo when he played in his place. You know, do we have to really, you know, go this direction? And that's where I think it gets a little tricky on that one. Now, there's challenges with the sign and trade. There are things on base year compensation issues that could be a problem. There are things with hard caps for the team acquiring him that could be issues. But that's all stuff that could be worked around there. So yeah, it'll be, you know, in a situation where they can make this stuff happen and get it done. So I'm with you. That was a very long way of saying I think he is signed and traded away from the Phoenix Suns at some point this offseason.
What's the best landing spot for him? And I know there's 30 different or 29 possibilities there.
Yeah, that's a really good question. But
what's the best? Portland?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What I want to do is answer that question. Can we table that and come back and answer it tomorrow after we see the results of the draft lottery? Only because there's the three bigs, right? You have Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jabari Smith. Smith's not really a center, but, you know, we'll see how it goes with those teams. Because, like, part of me wants to say the Spurs. Like, I think he could be a really good spur. Maybe you build something that's based around Jakob Poeltl going back the other way to the Suns. So, you know, and I feel like Ayton's, you know, right at that same time horizon age-wise with DeJounte Murray and Keldon Johnson and all those good young guards that San Antonio has, that could make a lot of sense. But if they get the number one overall pick or even the number two, mm-hmm. are they more likely to say, well, forget it. Let's not even spend the money there. We'll just draft our, you know, center of the future and we'll move on that way. But yeah, let's put that in a box and we'll come back and open that up tomorrow after the lottery. Cause I have some thoughts and I want to look at a couple things too.
Okay. Sounds like
one thing I do want to mm-hmm. say though, because you can bet on everything. Now, yes. BetOnline has odds on his next team, if not Phoenix. So let's just be clear. This is if he is not with the Suns at the start of the next season. Pistons, 1-1 odds. Okay. Magic, 2-1 odds. I don't see that one. Spurs, 3-1 odds. Pacers, 4-1 odds. Trailblazers, 6-1. Thunder, 8-1. Rockets, 10-1. And then this one's kind of interesting. Chicago Bulls, 12-1. Hmm.
I could see where the Bulls might want to get in on that. But, you know, sure. Basically, they're assuming, based on those odds, that teams with cap space are going to be more likely to land him. Now, maybe you can have cap space and say and use the threat of cap space as, hey, we're going to give him a max offer. We're going to give him a fourth-year player option. We're going to do all kinds of stuff to make this contract be one that you don't want to deal with, Phoenix. So let's just negotiate so you don't have to deal with those hoops. Maybe that's the way this plays out. I don't see it ultimately being some team offers him 4 years, third year or fourth year player option, everything they can do to try to make life difficult
on
Phoenix. They pull it, you know, throw everything at him. I still don't see the Suns saying, oh, well, we're just going to refuse to match and see you later. We'll let him go for nothing. Yeah. So when I look at those odds, I still lean towards it's going to be a sign and trade. Maybe the threat of the cap space kind of helps push it to get that done though.
Yeah, I did. But yeah, I mean, he's too good to let just walk, even with whatever issues they have going on.
Okay. Very simple bookkeeping thing here. Derek Favors picked up his player option with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Fully expected. We all knew he was going to pick that up. He could wind up on the trade market. We'll see. I think he's a movable, you know, expiring contract. But what was it, about 10 million off the top of my head? I don't have in front of me.
10.2 million. Well done.
All right, there we go. I might not have the draft picks, but I got something here. So Derek Favors picks up that player option again. Totally expected what we all assumed was going to happen, but now it's just official.
Yeah, and so a couple things with this. I made the joke the other day that after seeing what happened with Al Horford, our team's going to be burning up Sam Presti's phone saying, hey, what's going on with Derek Favors after you shelved him for half a season? You know, what do we think?
If we trade for
him,
does he suddenly become 25 again also? Is that how
exactly.
that works?
Yeah, right? Yeah, then pretty soon every veteran on a 1 or 2 year deal is going to be like, hey, I'll go to OKC for a year, you know, and hang out. The bigger thing of importance, because you're absolutely right, this was 100% expected to happen. As I'm very fond of saying, expected to happen, and now it's done. This is a reason why the Thunder aren't going to have cap space this summer. I know that seems really super weird to say, because this is a team that is still sitting on somewhere, you know, if they renounced free agents, somewhere between $22 and $32 million in cap space right now. But next year they're going to be an over the cap team. And here's the main reasons why. Favors at $10.2 million. Mm-hmm. No, not alone, but that's a big number. It's actually the second double digit contract on the Thunder's books next season. The other one is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's extension uh-huh. kicks in at what's projected now at $30.5 million. But they have $27.4 million in dead money on the books from Kemba Walker because of that buyout that they did. They did not stretch any of that money or anything. So that's on the books. And then you've got, you know, a couple high picks like Josh Giddey, you know, 6.3. They've just got a whole bunch of guys after that. So, you know, but you add those together, that's a big chunk of why this team is very, very, very likely to be over the cap. But that $22 to $32 million I referenced a couple minutes ago, that can still be used all the way through uh-huh. the draft. And I expect we are going to see the Thunder get involved with because now they can go up to 20 players on their roster too. I'm expecting we're going to see them get involved with eating a deal or two at the draft from some team, take some more money on the next year. Since you're already going to be over the cap anyway, might as well take some money on the next year's books too, and just move on that way. So look for them to be extremely active at the draft in ways they weren't necessarily active at the trade deadline as far as eating a contract.
Someone put Skylar Gray on standby.
They don't have that much room.
Just saying. No, I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Well, here's the other thing that's difficult with that, too. That would involve, he would have, and we're obviously speaking about Russell Westbrook, he would have to opt in because he's not trade eligible right now.
He's got until, I think, the 29th to decide whether or not he's going to opt in. And so if he,
June 20th.
Yeah, if he wants to make a mess of things, he can do that and wait to opt in until last minute if he chooses. Yep.
Imagine that, though. Like, that would be, I mean, you could almost kind of get there, you know, Favors and throw, I don't know, Mike Muscala back and then the cap space. I mean, you're almost there. You could get there, you know, with relative ease, you know, and that would be very interesting to see, you know, if that's the way that went. And then, I don't know, maybe he just goes back there and then they go the walk around and just buy him out. Well, and say, hey, we'll eat the money because we're not doing anything with cap space anyway next year.
I mean,
but that would cost both first round picks for sure for the Lakers to pull
and that's
off.
And that's where I've said, nope, not doing that from the Lakers. Yeah. I think that's a pretty high price to pay. But in any event, not what I expect to happen, just – interesting. The OKC's got some cap space and, you know, who knows?
Yeah, they're going to be involved in doing something. They're going to.
As they should.
Yeah, they'll be, I mean, they're going to be busy anyway because they've got three first round picks, but they'll be, you know, really busy, in other ways around the draft because we're, you know, that's 20 to 30 million has a clock on it. And that clock's about a month and a half away because once we roll to July 1st, it's gone. That's gone. Now we're in the new league year and it's gone. Fully.
So. All right, let's move on to the Charlotte Hornets.
Only us can turn Derek Favors doing a minor piece of bookkeeping into a 15-minute segment.
into Russell Westbrook back to OKC. And yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know what? I mean, I'll say this. At least Derek Favors didn't. Oh my gosh, why is the name escaping me? Who's the guy for the Heat that didn't pick up his agent, didn't pick up the player option in time? Didn't submit the paperwork. It was, it's a guard.
Geez.
Gosh, I referenced this the other day too. Anthony Carter.
Was it Deion? Oh yeah. Anthony Carter. Yeah.
Yep.
I was saying for some reason I wanted to say Deion Waiters and I was like, that's not right. It's not.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deion Waiters, but yeah.
Okay, but let's move on to the Hornets. Darvin Ham.
Man, that was a deep pull. You went way back.
I had to. Darvin Ham is a serious candidate to get the Hornets coaching job, which is, I mean, great for Darvin Ham. I think it would be a good fit for him. He's also in the running for the Lakers job, along with like a dozen other people. And the Hornets also interviewed Terry Stotts as well. So right now, it's the Lakers and the Hornets. Those are the two jobs open now that the Kings job has been filled by Mike Brown. So those two jobs, all the major coaching candidates are going to get interviews. We talked the other day about Frank Vogel interviewing with the Hornets, Mike D'Antoni being a candidate as well, and how much fun that would be, whether or not that's good for the Hornets. So interesting that they're looking at these different candidates. If it's me, I probably prefer Darvin Ham if I'm the Hornets. But we'll see ultimately which direction they go. I wonder if they want to do this before the Lakers settle on anybody. If that is any kind of a thought in the Hornets process here.
Yeah, we're starting to see a lot of crossover in candidates here, and that's part of your worry if you slow play the process. Now, that doesn't mean you should rush it. You 100% should not. You guys still got to do things the right way, because getting the right person is more important than getting somebody for quickly. Sure. But if you're, let's just say you're the Lakers, because they interviewed Darvin Ham too, I believe, or he's on the list to be interviewed by them. If you really want him, now you may have to go get him, right? Versus just, well, we'll see what happens with Quinn Snyder and Doc Rivers and all that stuff and anything else that's kind of out there around that. So I think it is very it's very important that you have to start narrowing your list here and really deciding where do we want to go. I think that Darvin Ham's going to be a great head coach. In this league, I just have a feel. I have through talking to a lot of people and just seeing the way he interacts with folks, I have kind of Ime Udoka vibes from him. Former player, but was a guy. He was a role player, an end of the bench kind of guy who had to fight to be, you know, keep his playing career going, and then really turned into a pretty good assistant coach who's been highly thought of. He's kind of just like Udoka, been through the process now a few times, and hasn't landed his spot. But I get that feeling. I do wonder, are the Lakers the place for him? Because whoever it is has to come in with the immediate of LeBron, AD, at a minimum. I mean, we're down to only a handful of guys who may be back from last year's team, but those two at a minimum, you have to have their full respect and backing, or it's just not going to work.
Right.
And I'm not saying they wouldn't back Darvin Ham, but you have to make sure you have that coming in. Are they going to want somebody who's a little more of a known quantity at this point in their careers and with what they're looking to accomplish? I would say there was that thought with the Celtics of, you can't go with a first-time head coach because, you know, this team's already been close to getting over the hump, and you need somebody who comes in and knows what they're doing, and they went with the first-time head coach. And I clearly have biases, but I don't think it's a bias to say it's worked out quite well.
Of course. It's been great, and that's part of the reason why, when I've been looking at things from, you know, the Lakers side of things and saying, you know what, like, I get the pressure and all that of being with the Lakers. I get the LeBron thing and AD and all of that. I don't think they should dismiss anyone just because they don't have head coaching experience. I think we've seen so many times where even guys where maybe it took a year or two for a first-time head coach, but they still had a decent amount of success early on. You have to consider that, especially because a lot of these guys have gone to teams that weren't necessarily ready to win, and then have developed reputations as have grown with their teams. And again, that's not the situation the Lakers are in right now. Yep. But still, we've seen first-time head coaches be successful. The NBA, if you look at over the last 10 years, the NBA has changed a ton, the way basketball is played. And so I think that pushes more. Like, if basketball had stayed stagnant, if we were still playing the same style of basketball that we did back in, say, 2000 right now, well, then I think I don't really like the word, but the retread coaches, the guys who have been around forever, I think would have that much more of a leg up. But given how much change we've seen in the game, it makes all the more sense to go with the guys that might not have as much experience, because how valuable is that experience when it's coming in an NBA that frankly doesn't exist anymore? I'm very much open to a first-time head coach, whether I'm the Hornets or the Lakers. I'm not turning those guys down just because they don't have experience.
And it's not like a guy like Darvin Ham retired yesterday or has been away from the game. I mean, he's been an assistant coach for years now and has been, you know, a well thought of assistant coach too. So it's not like you're coming completely out of left field with this hire, right? You're really getting someone into the, you know, how do I say this? You're getting someone who's been around and has kind of paid his dues and done the things he needed to do to get to this point. So yeah, I think he'd be a great hire. It's again, I'm not expecting there to be like another three jobs that open or anything, because I think we're kind of down to it. So, but when you start to have all this crossover between candidates, don't lose your guy because you're, you know, playing games hoping someone comes available that probably isn't. Just, you know, if you like somebody else, go get it done and get that job. And I mean I can, you know, not trying to be funny or anything, yeah, I'd pick the Lakers over the Hornets too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, you know, if I was presented with all things being equal, yeah, I'd pick the Lakers without any question at all.
Terry Stotts, would he, I mean, he's known as an offensive mind. Mm-hmm. Would he be kind of hedging between Mike D'Antoni and more of a defensive coach? I mean,
yeah, I think so.
It's an interesting fit there to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one's one that could make a lot of sense there, because you're not going so far one direction. It's in order, though, for them to be even competitive defensively. It's not, no coach in the world is going to save that. I don't care if it's the best defensive coach of all time. You need to fix the personnel. They just don't have defenders on the roster. And that's, you know, that's going to be something that's going to take probably 2 years at least, a full two, you know, cycles through, you know, offseason, trade deadline, draft, through all that stuff. It's probably 2 years to really start to reverse that. But you got to kind of get started on that process at some point here if you're the Hornets.
All right. Shall we talk conference finals?
Let's
all right,
do it.
Let's start off with one that's tonight. And so that is the Celtics and the Heat. I'm expecting like an old school style, not super old school, but Eastern Conference battle, like defense, grit and grind, all that kind of stuff. And these are two very good defensive teams. That's what they hang their hat on. I'm not expecting a fast-paced game. I'm not expecting high-scoring totals. I'm expecting this to be a battle here. This is going to be, I think we're going to see scores in the 90s, and I mean maybe low hundreds. And I think we're going to see these two teams really get after each other. And I can't wait to see what this ultimately looks like. I know you've got a lot of thoughts on it, but to me, this is an interesting series. But it's not going to be necessarily an offensive series. I think this one's going to be about the defense, kind of the clash of two defensive juggernauts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are arguably the two best defensive teams in the league. I don't think there's any question when you combine regular season and playoffs, they've been there. And I do think that is going to be the way this series goes. There's going to be a game where somebody's going to score 120 points just because that's what happens in the course of a series. It'll be someone will get super hot from three. It'll be a blowout, and that'll be how it'll go down. But I think more often than not, this might be a first to 100 wins kind of series, because I think these two teams are, not only are they good defenses, they're good defenses for each other. The way they play, they're versatile. They can switch. They can play a lot of different stuff. I 100% believe Eric Spoelstra is going to have something that he's going to go to. It might be midway through the second quarter of game three before he breaks it out, but there's going to be something at some point that the Celtics have not seen. And that's going to be, you know, maybe the difference in this, series for the Heat side. I think overall, and I'll kind of, I know we'll do picks at the end, but I'll step on my pick here because it's already out there a number of places. But I picked Celtics to win in six. And my biggest reason why is I think Miami plays in almost all lineups one player you can isolate and attack, whether that's Max Strus. He's a good defender, but he's not great. And especially if they get him on Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, it could be trouble. But it could be Tyler Hero if Duncan Robinson shows up in this series. Gabe Vincent, just from standpoint of his size at the point guard position, and he's not Kyle Lowry. Oh, we should mention that Kyle Lowry is out for at least game one, if not beyond. We'll see what happens there. But the Celtics don't do that. They don't play guys that you can attack. People go to Peyton Pritchard, but the Celtics are so good about getting him out of mismatches and making sure he's in a position where what he has to do is defend on the perimeter on ball, where he's fine and his height doesn't work against him. So that's, I think, the difference. I think Boston will be able to score just enough easier than Miami throughout the course of this series, and that'll get them the win in six.
So when I'm looking at the series, and I was just digging into some of the stats here, the Miami Heat are playing at the 12th fastest pace, so pretty low in the NBA playoffs right now. Surprisingly, the Mavs are actually pretty low in pace as well. But they're not a team that's going to run the ball up and down the floor. The Celtics are seven, so that's you know a bit quicker. I think that some of that is from transition play, though, getting steals, turnovers, things like that. I think that you're going to see there's a lot of pressure put on, like you said, that other defender in Miami, whether it's Max Strus or whoever it is. I think there is going to be some sort of surprise. I wonder how big of a factor Spoelstra versus Ime Udoka is going to be. That's one of my big question marks going into this series. I think Ime Udoka is absolutely fantastic, but I think Eric Spoelstra might be the best coach in the NBA. So that, yep. I think, is going to that's going to show up at some point in this series. Will it matter enough to change the outcome? I'm not sure, but I think that's going to be a factor at some point in this series. And again, I don't think Ime Udoka is a bad coach. I think he's a very good coach. But Spoelstra, sure. I think, has we got to give him the edge there.
Sorry, let me jump in there real quick, just because I wrote this for Celtics blog in my series preview. This is the biggest advantage the Heat have. Is, you know, I think Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the league, and I think we're getting close to he's moving way up the all-time best coach lists. Like he is unbelievable. And my biggest thing is with this is you don't go through years now of they have, and no, it gets referred to as Heat culture and all that. That I think is propaganda nonsense. But I think what they have is it's more of an NFL thing, but I think they do it in the NBA better than anybody else. Next man up.
Yep.
All right, Kyle Lowry's out. Gabe Vincent, you're going to plug in there. Tyler Herro, you're going to do some backup ball handling. Let's go. We just move. We go to the next thing, and we just go. We don't worry about who's out. We just play and do that. And the way they develop players and put them in position just better than anybody else. So, sorry, I just had to jump
in. No, you're fine with that. I agree. I think one of the other things that I'm going to be looking at in this series, though, like tonight, Miami is favored. They're at home. They've had more rest. But when I look at last series, which team played a series that has them more prepared for this series? I think it's the Celtics. I think the Heat, and I'm not saying they can't do this, but in terms of acclimating to the intensity of this series compared to the previous series, the Heat have the bigger gap there because you played a injured Joel Embiid and a pretty lethargic version of James Harden last round. And so with that being the case, I think compared to the attention to detail that you've got to have, the degree of locked innedness, I'm making up words now, that you had to have to go at Giannis, I think that translates better to this series. Now, again, that's not me saying that the Heat don't have an advantage with more rest or any of that kind of stuff. Just I think it's a bigger jump up for Miami. And so I think that's going to matter as well. I agree with you with Celtics. And I think if the Celtics are going to win it, it's going to be in six. I know they just won a game seven, but that was at home. I'm going to go with my head says Celtics in six as well. But just to say something different and make my own hopes and dreams maybe come true here, I'm going to say Miami in seven. But again, if I was like putting money on it, I would probably go Celtics in six as well. I think that ultimately they've got more scoring weapons than Miami does. And in a defensive struggle, sometimes having that one extra guy that you can give the ball to when everything breaks down and say, here, go get us a bucket, that can be the difference. And so that's where I look at like Jaylen Brown. I think that's going to be the difference in the series ultimately.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I think it's just that ability to find offense that much easier is going to be good. And it's people keep going back to, well, people said this in 2020. This is not the same Celtics. They don't have Kemba Walker, who they have to hide on defense. They don't have Daniel Tice as the only big man trying to stop Bam Adebayo. It's a very different team. And most importantly, more important than any of that other stuff, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are very much now comfortable with, this is our team. We run things at the end of the game, and we play. I'll give you one more key to watch, turnovers. Yes. Both of these teams have had trouble all year when they turn it over. The only time Miami has really struggled in games is if they're giving the ball up. And that might be where not having Kyle Lowry really hurts them, because, you know, he's just terrifying when you know this is the, you know, drafted the guy who is going to calm, and make it difficult on you all night.
All right. Agreed. Let's move on. Let's talk about the West.
All right, let's do it.
Dallas. The Mavs against the Warriors. Not what we expected, but here we are. Phoenix, the best team in the NBA over the course of the regular season, found their way out of the playoffs, and so now we have the Mavs and the Warriors. This is going to be an interesting series. As much as people want to kind of dumb it down to Luka versus Steph, Klay, and Draymond, I think that the Mavs role players in this are going to be extremely important. Reggie Bullock, Dorian Finney-Smith. Can these guys bring you consistent defense? Can they stay out of foul trouble? And can they hit the three at a respectable rate in this series? I think that's going to be extremely important for the Mavs' ability to keep pace with the Warriors. I don't want to, you know, lean too much in here and reveal my pick just yet, but the Warriors, I think, have to come into this series as the favorite. But I'm not going to count out the Mavs because of how good they've been defensively under Jason Kidd. That gives you a puncher's chance here.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's insulting to make it Luka versus the Warriors to the rest of those Mavs. And I won't, regurgitate what you just said. But I do think it is that what's been kind of sticking in the back of my head is we're already hearing a lot of how Luka is the best player in this series. Mm-hmm. Luka. And I just imagine Steph Curry is sitting there saying, okay, yeah, there's going to be a game or two where he's going to remind everybody, hey, I'm pretty good still.
Yeah.
You know, let's not forget. I think the difference in this will be where the Suns just, they just couldn't get off. And once the Mavericks said, cut the head off the snake and we're going to take Chris Paul away. And then the Suns just went, they just fell apart.
Yeah.
You know, they did get one more win after those first two games, but that was a game where Dallas couldn't hit any shots. And the Mavericks very early on said, all right, you got this one. We're going to live to fight another day.
Yeah.
They very much, you know, bailed out on that. So I think what we're seeing now is it is going to be a full on battle here where it's going to be, who do the Mavs try to take away? It starts with Steph, but you got Klay, you got Jordan Poole, you got Draymond, you even have Andrew Wiggins at times can do his thing. It's just going to be that much harder. And I think that's going to ultimately be what makes the difference in this series. I'll give my pick now. I'm picking Warriors in seven, and that's with a healthy dose of respect for Luka and the Mavericks defense. Because I think the Mavs defense is that good. I think they play really well. But this could be one where I could see this. It's Warriors are up 3-0, and we're like, yeah, Luka just ran out of steam, and he doesn't have anything left. And then this thing's over early. But I do think, you know, I don't think they're – even if they lose these first two in San Francisco, okay, no big deal. We did it last series. We're just going to go home. We'll get it done. You know, losing game to Utah, whatever, no big deal. We just go home and get it done. So I think this Mavs team, they're tough. They're you know, what is it, battle-tested. Mm-hmm. You know, they're ready to go. But I am going to pick Warriors in seven.
Yeah, I'm even going to go Warriors in six in this one. I just think that they're better equipped to deal with what the Mavs throw at them. I think they're very good defensively themselves, particularly when they really lock in. I'm interested to see what Andrew Wiggins defending Luka looks like. Of course, Luka, it's a team defense. It's not just one player, but I think he'll be the primary defender. Then you have Klay to put over onto him as well, who isn't the defender that he used to be, but still, you can even get Draymond on him as well. I think that they can throw a lot of different looks at him. And then the question becomes, what can Jalen Brunson do? Can he really get going? But then when you look at the other side and you say, well, Jalen Brunson can really get going as the secondary guy. And then you look at the Warriors and you go, oh, man, not Klay could go for 35 tonight. Oh, and there's this guy named Jordan Poole who can come in and he can drop 30 on any given night. I just think there's too many options there to try to shut down, even for a good Mavs defense. And ultimately, that's going to carry the Warriors all the way through to the finals. Again, though, I think this is going to be another battle. I think that the Mavs are better than people are giving them credit for, and we're going to wind up with a close series. So that's what I'm hoping for. I don't want to see a bunch of blowouts again.
No, absolutely not.
But I do think the Warriors wind up taking this.
Yep, completely agree. Yeah, I think, you know, I think we're in for two hard fought, competitive, hopefully very entertaining conference finals here. And we're down to, you know what I do. I start counting games. We're down to 21 games left in the season for a maximum. I want as many of them as we can get.
Speaking of which, we will be on playback tomorrow night to do game one of Mavs versus Warriors. So make sure you use the link in the description down below and you come join us over there on playback. We'll be doing the live play-by-play. We'll be talking basketball with you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. So come join us over there. Again, I'm going to put the link in the description over on YouTube. So come join us for that. Keith, I can't wait. I know you're excited for the draft lottery tonight and Celtics versus Heat, which are going to be great. But I'm excited to get to do more play-by-play with you.
Yeah, no, man, it's we had so much fun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a blast. So, I'm super excited for that, too.
All right. Well, I think that wraps things up for today. Covered a lot of stuff. Went in depth into a lot of things. Hopefully, everybody enjoys Miami versus Boston tonight. Maybe you'll join me in just kind of not paying attention, putting my fingers in my ears and saying la, 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 la during the draft lottery. I'm going to try to bury my head in the sand during that moment. But other than that, I'm looking forward to a fun night in the NBA. Make sure you do subscribe right here to the NBA Front Office YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts. Leave us that 5-star rating and review as well. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.